Welcome to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats, the show for fishermen by fishermen. Today's show is brought to you by Enigma Fishing, Cast, Catch, Repeat. Visit Anderson, South Carolina, home of beautiful Lake Hartwell. Phoenix Boats, experience the difference. And by the Bass Anglers Sportsman Society. Now here's lifetime BASS member, Tom Abraham.
Welcome to this week's episode of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. I am Tom Abraham, your guide for the next hour as we feature the Bassmaster Elite Series and those looking to get into that exclusive group through the BassPro.com Open Series and the up-and-comers on the Carhartt Bassmaster College Series presented by Bass Pro Shops and the tens of thousands of Bass Nation anglers around the country competing on the local level, all with a chance to advance to the big leagues of professional fishing. The Bass Nation operates youth, high school, and college programs, including a Junior Bassmaster Championship, a High School National Championship, the College National Championship, and the College Bracket, leading to the Bassmaster Classic. The Bass Nation is at the grassroots of who we are, and for more information on how to become a member or to start a Bass Nation Club, visit Bassmaster.com and click on the Nation tab. The best way to communicate with the show, to post your pictures or tell us your stories or just comment on the show, is to visit our Facebook fan page at facebook.com/BASS or on Twitter at Bassmaster and use the hashtag Bass Radio. You can also listen to all the shows at Bassmaster.com/radio or just hit the watch button at Bassmaster.com and click on Bassmaster Radio. Well, going into Championship Sunday at Santee Cooper, Brandon Polinick was already known as the closer, and he did it again. Coming up with some key fish in the closing hours of the event, Polinick blew open a close race with Carl Jacobson to take home his second blue trophy of the season and fifth of his career. Maybe just as impressive was the 7-pound, 11-ounce brush panda Brandon caught on a drop shot on a feeling. Polinick moves into 15th in the AOI standings, not that he's paying any attention to that, while Clark Wendelet strengthened his hold on the season-long points lead. Polinick is coming up in the Rapala's winner's circle later on. Rapala pro and longtime bass vet Bernie Schultz put himself above the classic cut line with an impressive fifth-place finish, and he did it doing something a little different than the rest of the field. Bernie will clue us in on his tricks of the trade as well. Of course, as you listen to this, the Guaranteed Rates Bassmaster Elite at Chickamauga Lake is underway, the third event in as many weeks, and we'll have the winner and full coverage of that derby next week. But in the leadoff role today, Bass Publications Executive Editor Brian Brasher will join us to talk about this crazy year and what one of the silver linings may be.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. And you know what? I thought we'd lead things off today with a guy that's been great for us on the show in the past. You read him on the back page of Bassmaster Magazine and the front page, or the first page, if you will, of Bass Times. He is the executive editor of publications for Bass, one Brian Brasher. Brian, welcome back to the show. How are you, man?
I'm doing good, man. I appreciate you having me. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. I mean, it's you know, we don't want to downplay what has happened with COVID, you know, throughout the year. But in our industry, in the fishing industry, whether it's fishing itself being out there and recreating or covering tournaments or, you know, everything else that we've been doing, manufacturers and all that kind of stuff, it's actually been a silver lining, a little bit of a blessing for folks in this business. And we're open arms, welcoming in so many new fishermen all around the country. You know, some 8 million new licenses. I mean, you know, that's just fantastic stuff.
Yeah, I felt kind of guilty at the beginning of all of this saying things like that, because I know there are people out there who've lost their jobs and have lost loved ones and have really struggled through this whole thing. But I think fishing really has served as that silver lining, as that escape from the whole deal. I was lucky enough. My father retired right in the middle of all of this, right as the bluegill and shellcracker went on bed, as a matter of fact. And I got to spend more time with him and my uncle than I ever have in my life, two of my favorite people in the world. And I know situations like that repeated themselves all over the country. You know, not only with just the new fishermen coming in. That's a great thing, and I hope some of those folks enjoyed it enough that they will stick with it, even after the movie theaters and all of that are reopened. But there were a lot of fishermen who were able to reconnect, who knew the sport and got to enjoy it more than they have in recent years. So fishing has been a great escape, and I'm glad to see that. Glad for our industry, glad for the people who are enjoying the sport.
I'm at the other end of that spectrum. I have been able to fish with three of my four sons an extensive amount, more than I had ever in the past. And in fact, one of my three sons now has fished a couple of nice little tournaments with me, which has been really, really cool. And my dad, who's 81 years old and lives in Florida and you know, sees the pictures that I post of me and the boys catching fish, keeps saying, come and get me. I need to go fishing in that boat. Put me in that pretty Phoenix. He wants to get in the boat. He doesn't understand that, you know, what it takes to get that boat up on plane. He'll be yelling at me at 30 miles an hour, my kidneys. But I can't wait to get him out.
And you think about the industry effects. You know, there's been so much fishing tackle sold, so many boats sold, and then for bass itself, we had some coverage on ESPN, live coverage, when all of the other live sports were shut down. And I don't want to see live sports shut down. I'm a football fan to the core. But while we didn't have that, we were able to fill that void, and I think a lot of people were introduced to us. Yeah. Or even the ones who knew us became more familiar with us. And, man, did our guys put on a show when they had that opportunity. Yeah. So there have been some positives. I'll be glad when it's all over, and I hope a lot of those positives carry over.
Yeah, I wrote a piece for Bassmaster.com comparing that perfect storm this summer that put the Bassmaster Elite Series on ESPN 2 to 1979 when Daytona 500 was aired flag to flag for the very first time, and there was a huge storm that hit the Northeast. The whole Northeast corridor was buried under a snowstorm, and all these people were stuck in their houses. This is pre-cable, and sat there, and what'd they watch? They watched these good old boys racing around on the track at Daytona. It was a fantastic race, and it launched NASCAR into what it became. Certainly had a big factor in that, and I kind of wondered about whether or not this scenario might have created a situation like that, because I know I heard from a lot of people during that time, my regular ESPN radio show in Alabama, a lot of people saying, what am I looking at on ESPN2? What are they doing? So there were a lot of new fans that came to the sport through that time, and the number 7 or 8 million people consuming that stuff on those weekends that it was on ESPN2.
And I saw that piece, and it was very, very well done, and I couldn't help but think, you know, you think about that period in NASCAR when you had the Yarbroughs and the Allisons, mm-hmm. and the Bonnets, and who became household names because of that. And then we have Chris Johnston and Jamie Hartman and Seth Fighter and Brandon Palahniuk, who were introduced to a whole new world through our situation. Why couldn't it have the same effect? Yeah. You know, and you hate that it has to happen through some sort of tragedy for the country, but you know, if that's another one of those silver linings that comes out of it, then I will be most happy for those guys, because they deserve it. They deserve to be household names. They are that good. And I think a lot of people knew who they were prior to that, and a whole lot more know now. It worked out very, very well from that perspective.
Brian Brasher with us, executive editor from Bass. And, you know, and part of it has been these personalities in the last couple of weeks in our Winner Circle segments. We've had Patrick Walters, and today Brandon Palahniuk will join us coming off his win last week at Santee Cooper. What great personalities. They're fantastic on the air. They answer, you know, when I send them a text, they answer almost immediately, and yes, I'm in, and boom, away we go, and it's been really fun. And then we got a guy, I don't want to call him a crusty old veteran, but he is a vet and a very popular guy, Clark Wendlandt, who's building a pretty big lead in this Angler of the Year race, and might run away and hide with it. But what a great guy Clark Wendlandt is. I mean, so it's been really, really cool to see the guys that are in it and to see the guys in the Opens. I fish those Eastern Opens and see the guys that are trying to get in it, because the field in the Open Series is incredible right now, because so many people are trying to get into the elites.
I have a cousin who is a big tournament fisherman around locally in Alabama on all the lakes of the Coosa River, and he called me before the open season really kicked off and said, you know, I've been thinking, he's in his early 50s, and he was thinking, I've always wanted to take a shot at the opens, and I was thinking maybe this is the year. And I said, man, I'm never going to discourage anybody from chasing that dream, but I just want you to know there's never been a tougher time to get into that mix. You just look at it, and there's so many names on that list who have won events, who have won multiple events, and who, you know, are just ready to break out and win one anytime. It's tougher than it's ever been. There's more interest in that. Ronnie Moore and his bunch have been doing such a fantastic job with Opens Live.
Yeah.
You know, you've been getting a live look at that on Championship Saturdays, which has been fantastic. So, yeah, you have two trails right now that the world is tuned into. Then you go to the nation with the grassroots and the college and the high school and the kayak. So much going on from a bass fishing standpoint. And don't forget, anytime you start talking about all that stuff, to mention the folks who make those schedules.
Oh,
it has been, I called it one time playing Twister with porcupines. That's about what it's like for them to keep those schedules up and running, to change on the fly, to move one from New York to Georgia or Florida. You know, it's just, I wouldn't want that job for one second, and they have done it masterfully. So it's been interesting. It really has. It's a year. I hope we don't ever have another one like it, but it has been an interesting ride.
Yeah, and it was something. And we got to remember, those people are all planning next season at the same time as they're all of
absolutely
a sudden shifting tournaments around. And now they got to, you know, maybe the season starts a little bit later. Maybe there's only one event before the Classic next year instead of a couple, and because this is going to go so long. And the manufacturer's helping out the anglers, too, because I know a lot of the anglers are saying, I'm still going to be fishing tournaments when I normally have sold my boat and I'm getting ready to rig the new boat. And
sure.
Yeah, we're still doing a
whole
tournament.
New situation.
Yeah, so it's
people ask me. They keep asking me, "What's the schedule going to look like for 2021?" And my response is, "You know what? Eric Lopez is one of the guys who handles a lot of that." Yeah. And I say, "You know what? You call Eric and ask him that, because with all the work I see him putting in on a daily basis, I don't have the heart to ask him about next year. I want to see him live through this year.
Yeah, we
and
had
after
him on.
That, we'll go from there.
Yeah, we've had him on a couple of times talking about this, just that thing, and he and his crew all doing such a great job. And you guys do such a great job as well with all the publications. And I know in James Hall and the and Bassmaster Magazine, I love reading your segments on the back page there as well. Bass Times has been fantastic, you know, as well. So keep up the great work with it. I love the .com, but I never want to turn, not have my pages to turn. I still love turning those pages, so keep all that good work going.
Hey, there's room for all of us in the world, and you keep up the good work too, okay?
All right, man, appreciate you. Thank you very much.
Okay. Right. Thanks, buddy.
Great job there with Brian Brasher. Outstanding job that he does. All right, we're going to get a break in here. We'll come back. Bernie Schultz is next, right here on Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now a chance to talk to a guy. Got a lot of camera time over the weekend because he was right there, man. And he was making some of us nervous because he was fishing light line around those cypress trees, wacky rigging it. He had a couple of 12-pound plus days, but in the middle, a couple of 17-pound plus days. Bernie Schultz finishing top five in this event. Rapala Pro Bernie Schultz. It was very, very fun watching him get it done there. The vet out there with some of those young bucks, and he got it done, and he joins us now. Bernie, welcome to the show, man. How are you?
Great, Tom. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, I tell you what, it was a lot of fun watching you, but it was awfully nerve-wracking watching you, because we could see guys that were punching like crazy with 65-pound braid, and there you were with the old spinning outfit and that wacky rig throwing it around those cypress trees, and, man, that takes a lot of talent to keep those fish out of those trees when you're hooking them up in that stuff.
Yeah, the normally you can get away with heavier line there, but the water was down and super clear. I mean, it's the clearest I've ever seen it out on the main lake. You get in some of the backwater ponds and it gets real clear. Some areas on the lake are clear, but they're very protected. But I was fishing really exposed areas. The trees were out in wide open spaces, and that was the only way I could get bit.
You know, no place is strange to a veteran like you. You've been around the Horn a while, and you've been fishing professionally for so many years. But were you fishing history there, or was this something that you had found in practice that you felt would work for you?
Well, you know, that's the predominant cover on Santee Cooper Lakes. And, you know, cypress trees are prolific there. They're in both lakes. They come way out from shore. They grow to as deep as 7 and 8 feet of water, some of them. But the lake was super low. Interestingly, the fish weren't on the deepest trees. I got very few bites on deep trees. Most of my bites were like from 1.5 to 2.5 feet of water, maybe 3 feet. Those were the trees they preferred, and you had to fish a million of them to get a few bites. It was a really slow, tedious deal, and light line was a ticket for me.
Was it something that you just felt like you had to commit to and just stay with it? Because you have so much water there between the two lakes. It would seem to be it could drive some guys nuts, but you almost got to kind of make it a smaller lake, right?
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't have a lot going in practice. I got very few bites in practice, and I knew it was going to be tough. Just, you know, the doc talk was that it was really tough. You can't always trust that. But my roommate, Cliff Prince, I work with Cliff, and he was feeling like it was going to be a really tough tournament also. And so bouncing ideas off of each other, we figured out had to really slow down, go with light tackle, and really commit to whatever it was you did in the tournament. The punching guys, I don't think they got a lot of bites either.
Yeah, I mean, that was it. We saw guys just swinging for the fences, really going big. It seemed like, I mean, you had 12-8 the first day, and then you come back with two really nice bags, 17-10, 17-13 on day two and three. And then on day four, I mean, it was tough to get. Happiest, didn't even get a limit. You were one of the guys that had a limit and ended up finishing in that top five spot. But it seemed to be that you kind of almost had to make that decision. But it wasn't like you were going to be sorting through a ton of fish, get a limit, and then go looking for a big one. It was just a matter of getting five good bites.
Yeah, actually, I started the other way. I was trying to get a big bite early every day, and I never could until the third day, and then I got two. I was starting with a Hildebrandt buzzbait, and the guys that follow your show can go to Bassmaster.com and see the lures that we use, but I was using a black buzzbait and fishing lily pad fields and just trying to cover water in the morning. And the first 2 days of the tournament, the fish wouldn't commit to the bait. They'd follow it or boil it, but they would never eat it. And I couldn't catch them with follow-up baits, but I knew they were good-sized fish. You could tell by the amount of water they displaced. Then on day three, things changed. It was a different morning. It was muggy, really low, thick clouds, right at sunrise. And I got two key bites. I got a six and one almost five. And that kind of, that changed the whole outcome for me, got me in the top 10. And then I tried probably for too long on day four with the buzz bait, but it didn't work at all. I didn't get any follows or anything.
Yeah, so you made that quick change to go wacky rigging. Talk to me a little bit about running around on that water. I have never been there. You're running a beautiful Ranger with the Mercury on it, and we heard so much about lower units and being careful with stumps everywhere and so on. Is it something that where these areas are not clearly defined? Is there a very clear channel? Why is it that this seems to be a more dangerous place than others if you don't know what you're doing?
It's not well marked. Neither lake is marked very well. There are boat lanes in the upper lake, but they're not really that well defined. It's amazing to me that the amount of traffic on that lake that the Corps or whoever's responsible for its maintenance, the fish and game people, somebody needs to mark that lake. It's very, very treacherous. And there's a lot of guys taking chances that even guys that know the lake run into trouble from time to time. It's there's a lot of stuff below the waterline that you'll never see until you hit it.
Man, that is spooky. Of course, you got your Garmin electronics. I would imagine mapping there is even with the mapping though, you got to be careful. I can't imagine, you and I are old enough to remember before we had these kind of GPS maps and everything else. I can't imagine running around a place like that without good mapping.
Yeah, it's a tough place to navigate, and you can get in trouble in a big hurry. You just gotta, be careful. And I spent a lot of time idling, I'll tell you that. Not looking for fish, trying to get to fish, places that I wanted to fish.
Yeah. Rapala Pro, Bernie Schultz with us. All right. Tell us about your setup for the wacky rigging, especially, you know, the line and the hook that you're using and how you're rigging it. Because, again, it was a situation where not a lot of people would think of doing that in that kind of cover.
Yeah, I was using a 7-foot medium action Shimano CI4 rod with a sustain 3,000 reel, and I spooled it with 10-pound braid and a 10-pound, the braid was 832 Suffix braid, and then the leader was Suffix Advanced fluorocarbon, 10-pound, and the rig was, I used a VMC Nico weedless hook, Ike approved weedless hook, and also the crossover ring, which is kind of secures the hook to the Senko. And I used a 5-inch green pumpkin watermelon laminate Senko.
Yeah. What size hook do you like in something like that when you know that you might tie into a, you know, a 7 or 8 pounder at any time?
Yeah, 102-aught. Yeah. You know, it just depends how fast you want the bait to fall. And I wasn't waiting the Senko. I think that's, that slow fall was very critical.
I tell you, I started fishing that Suffix braid this year. I cannot get over how smooth it is. You know, I mean, it doesn't get caught up in the reel. It doesn't. It casts like a dream. I mean, it really is an outstanding line. And it's just where braid has come in the last 10 or 12 years and what Suffix has done in the last couple of years is really incredible.
Yeah, the difference in the braid is the Gore-Tex fiber that's woven into the weave. So it's, it's unique and proprietary. It's just really good line. You'll never break it, I can tell you that. I frog with 30 when other guys are using 65-pound braid.
Man, that is incredible stuff. Bernie Schultz with us. All right. It's no secret. As I said, you're a veteran. I'm a veteran, you know, of fishing many years. Three in a row. I mean, how are you? You look spry on Saturday, on Championship Saturday. You look good. And now, of course, you've been through practice at Chick. While people are listening to this, you guys are already into the tournament at Chick. How's your body hold up? And what are a few things that guys like seasoned anglers like us should know that we have to do if we're going to be fishing 3 weeks in a row like this?
Keep moving is all I can tell you. I mean, I'm not a doctor or a nutritionist or health expert. All I can tell you is just, if I'm not active, I start feeling, you know, the pains and the sore and soreness and all that. The trick to me, when I'm on the road and fishing and staying out there on the water, that's when I feel my best.
Yeah, that's a good tip right there. You stay in great shape too. I mean, I would think that's part of it is you don't need that extra weight or anything like that on your joints, and you stay in really good shape.
Yeah, that's having two athlete sons. It kind of demand that.
That'll do it. All right, so you have moved into a pretty solid position right now in the AOI standings for making the Classic. Of course, Ray Roberts in March in Texas. You have fished 9 Classics. This would be your 10th. 2 tournaments to go. This one at Chick, and then, of course, at Lake Fork. How much do you look at the points right now? It's probably got to be top 42, 43, depending on who else might qualify through the Opens. But how much point scoreboard watching do you do, or do you just go out there and just going to fish and let the points fall where they may?
Well, I try not to, but it's hard. I mean, you know, so much is dependent on doing well in these things to get there. And so, you know, I pay attention to the points, but I don't try to dwell on them. I try to do the best I can and focus on the fishing when I can.
Will it change your strategy at all? I mean, in terms of, okay, look, I got to make sure that I have 5 each day so that I get those points and maintain my position, even if it isn't the best thing for making it all the way through all 4 days?
Yes and no. I mean, it depends on the fishery. And at this time of year, fishing's tough. You know, the last 2 tournaments, it hasn't been easy to get bites. And so any event in the fall, I'm looking to try and get as many bites as I can and hope that it, you know, equates to good points in the end.
Well, I'll tell you what, it was fun to watch this past week. And, you know, you're no pun intended, but you're charging up the AOI board. You know, there you go. There's for one of your sponsors. You're charging up that board. And, boy, I tell you what, you keep that up. And certainly we'll see you in Texas. But good luck this week at Chick. And congrats on a really good tournament at Santee Cooper.
Thank you, Tom. I really appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you. There you go. Bernie Schultz joining us there. And, you know, Bernie has been a regular on the show. He's been on the show many times, and I always love talking the fishing business with Bernie Schultz. I mean, he's a guy you can learn a lot from about the whole, you know, aspect in the business of professional fishing. But right now, no time to talk about that because he's going up that leaderboard in a hurry, and he was a real threat to win at Santee Cooper. We'll see.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
And welcome back, Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio. Now time for the Rapala Winner's Circle. And if you're going to have a Rapala Winner's Circle, why not have a Rapala Pro in Brandon Polinick? And he joins us now to talk about his exciting win that happened right there at the Santee Cooper's Lakes. And he joins us now. Brandon, welcome back to the Winner's Circle, my friend.
Thank you. I'm glad it wasn't too long since we got connected.
It wasn't too long. This is now. Last year we had two-time winners. You know, Cobb and Hartman did it. Now you've done it this year. These things are really hard to win, and it's funny because I think people would think that just because you've got a couple of wins, you got to be sitting right at the top of the AOI standings. Which of course you have won an AOI, but you're 15th in the AOI, so you've had a little bit of all or nothing kind of deal so far. Some finishes not as great, or you take home the blue trophy.
Yeah, I didn't even know. That's the first time I knew where I was in AOI. So
yeah, you said that when
I don't
you
look
won.
At the points.
We don't believe that. Nobody really believes that. You said you didn't look at the points when you won the AOI a couple of years ago, that you didn't look at them until right at the end. You really don't look at the points?
No, I really don't. That's the first time anyone's told me where I was sitting.
Okay.
I really had no idea.
All right. I'm sorry I told you. You're 15th. You're in the classic, okay? So you're definitely going to make the classic.
I knew that I was kind of out of contention to win AOI because I had had three bombs, right? I've had a phenomenal season outside of those three.
Yeah.
And they were three events that were, you know, each probably one or two bites that if I put them in the boat, it's a completely different ballgame. But that's the difference between winning AOI and not.
Yeah.
I've been on both sides of it. I know how that works. That's how this sport goes. And you have to almost fish flawlessly every time you set the hook to win one of those titles because it's that difficult.
Is there a different mindset? And by the way, I don't know if anybody's going to catch Clark Wendlandt, and it would be a very popular AOI for Clark to win that thing. But man, he has really started to stretch that thing out a little bit. But you know, you get to a certain point in your career, maybe, and next thing for you, maybe it's to win a classic. That's a very difficult thing to do. You've won AOI, but if you're not even looking at points, when you're fishing these things, are you fishing strictly to win? Because you certainly weren't looking for just any old fish on Saturday and Sunday. You were looking for big ones, and it only took five bites, and those five bites were going to be what you needed to win this thing.
Yeah, that's actually exactly why I don't look at the points, is because for me, it's all about the mindset and how you approach a body of water. And I've learned that lesson several years ago. Got caught up looking at points and trying to fish based on, you know, getting a good enough finish to get points, and I would always fall short. So I changed my approach to not look at points and only make decisions based on how I could catch as much weight as humanly possible on that day.
Yeah.
And that might not always mean that I'm going to be on the quality of fish to win, but it always forces me to make a decision to catch as much weight as I know how on that body of water on that given day. And, you know, and not saving fish, not holding back, you know, but that doesn't mean that you sit on a school and you just pound 3-pounder after 3-pounder after 3-pounder. If you know that you got 15 pounds and all you're going to keep catching is 3-pounders, you don't sit there and keep beating on them.
Yeah.
But you go and you make a decision to go try to catch a 4-pounder. And that's why I've gotten away from looking at points, not paying attention to the AOI race, and really just focusing day by day. And it helps me, you know, not put as much pressure on myself, even though obviously it's always in the back of your mind. You want to make the classic, but I feel like approaching it that way gives me better odds of qualifying versus looking at the bottom and saying, this is the base of where I need to be. Because if that's what you're focused on, that's where most of your finishes are going to be.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. Skeeter Yamaha Pro Brandon Polinick with us here in the Winner's Circle as we talk about his victory. You're getting a reputation of being a closer. They were calling you the closer on live. Look, your cousin-in-law, I guess he is now, Carl Jacobson, is a great guy. I mean, I love him. He's wonderful on the air. I remember during the last 2 hours texting Mark Zona in his little Z-cave up there up north where he's doing the live from, and I said, Polinick's going to stick one late. You stuck too late. You know, but I'm saying he's going to stick one late. This is what this guy does. You made some changes going into the last day as well. Does that creep into your mind at all? Because it seems like a confidence thing. It's almost like you know that you're going to do what you need to do on the final day to close out, and you do it again with a big bag on the last day, you know, with over 21 pounds.
Yeah, I had that final day was just crazy because, I mean, it all came down to those decisions that I made. But where I started day four is actually where I started the entire tournament on day one. But on day one, it didn't produce anything for me. I caught a pound and a half that I ended up calling out later in the day. And so I didn't even fish it day two and day three. And I wasn't planning on fishing it day four. But for whatever reason, I was sitting there in my boat at blast off waiting to take off. And about 10 minutes before we left, I told my camera guy that follows and films all the YouTube series stuff for us that, hey, I think I'm going to go start where we did day one. You know, just the conditions, it was hot and it was humid, and it was an area that I didn't think I could catch a lot of fish, but I thought that I could go there and I could catch one giant on top water. And the reason I thought that is because I was throwing a Storm Arashi topwalker in practice, and I caught an almost 7-pounder. Mm. So I knew that there were big fishies in that area, but when I got there on the final day, it had muddied up from the previous day's wind, and so I ended up picking up a bladed jig that I hadn't caught a fish on all the entire week, and I ended up catching a 4-pounder, a 3.5-pounder, and I found a brush pile on my Mega 360 and caught that 7-12 out of it on a drop shot. You know, like it was one of those days where it felt like every decision I made was the right one at the right time, and then, you know, later went back to my primary area and ended up catching a 3-pounder and a 4-pounder punching heavy mats.
Yeah, I cut you a little short on that last day. 22-11 on the last day. The 21-pound bag was your day one. So 22-11 on the last day. Now, about that 7-pound 11-ouncer, you do know the difference between a 6-pounder and an 8-pounder, don't you? I mean, you're telling everybody it's a 6-pounder on Sunday, and we're all looking at that and saying, damn, that looks more like 8 than 6. I mean, that's a fish and a half away from the right-sized fish. I mean, come on.
So there's a little bit of a story behind that. So the second day, I had a camera in my boat, and I caught a 6.5-pounder. Well, it ended up being 6.5, but I called it a 6.5-pounder. At first, I was like, oh, that might be a 7-pounder. I was like, no, that's like a 6.5. And everybody online was like, that's a 4-pounder, that's a 5-pounder. Well, it ended up weighing 6.5. So I caught that one, and I was like, it's a 6-pounder. Let you guys think what you want. You know, and then, of course, all the keyboard ninjas are like, that's not a 6-pounder, that's a 7-pounder. You know, whatever. But it was, I knew it was big. I didn't realize how big it was, actually, until later in the day when I opened up the live well, and it was sitting there, and I could see across its back and how wide it was across the back. And I thought, oh, wow, yeah, that one's bigger than 6.
Yeah. And then on a drop shot, I mean, really? I mean, we're not expecting that at Santee Cooper, and we know you're the drop shot guy when it comes to going up north, and you know, you catch a lot of big, strong smallmouth. Let's be honest. I mean, a 5-pound smallmouth fights like an 8-pound largemouth, so, you know, it's not the fight. But, man, talk to us about that setup and pulling an 8-pounder out of a brush pile, you know, with the thread of a you know, of a drop shot.
So, to be honest, I was not prepared for that at all. I had my drop shot rod in my boat because I just always keep one in there, but I had not retied it. I hadn't thrown it all week. I just had it in there for insurance purposes. But what had happened is I had tried to make a few casts around that brush pile with a big worm and a swim bait, and every time I would get this nasty, slimy grass from the bottom. And I felt like I could see the fish on my Mega 360, but I wasn't giving them the right approach. And so I had to reach in my box and reline my drop shot rod, put it through the guides, tie up a new leader, tie up a new hook, everything. So it was just one of those moments where I didn't feel rushed. I'm like, I'm just going to do this right, make sure everything is correct, and tied up a number one VMC Finesse Nico hook, put on a quarter ounce teardrop VMC tungsten, and then threaded on a 6-inch X-Zone Deception Worm. Texas rigged that on there so I could bring it through the brush pile without getting hung up. And spooled up a 10-pound Seaguar Gold Label leader. Normally I go with 8, but I thought, well, we're on Santee. Water's kind of dirty. There's big fish. Brush pile, I'm like, I'll go with 10. And that leader material is super thin, so I figured I could get away with 10. And my second cast on that brush pile, that fish 8, started swimming out. And I set the hook and originally thought that I had a catfish because the head shakes were so big, I thought it was rolling
right, like
a catfish. And next thing I know, it peels off and goes into the brush pile. And I'm like, I don't know, this might not be a catfish. And thankfully ended up, I got her hung up in the brush pile. She was head shaking, broke one of the branches off, and I brought the fish and the branches and everything in the boat.
Yeah, it was a great fish catch on live for sure. Brandon Polinick with us here in the Rapala Winner's Circle for the second time this season. Now, you said a number one, not a one-aught, a number one hook, which is, you know, again, it just feels so foreign to those of us living in the South that they think that little hook is going to help. This is a silly question to ask, but 7-Eleven on a drop shot. Biggest largemouth ever on a drop shot? Got to be, right?
Oh, man. It might be, actually. Oh. I hadn't thought about that.
Man, I can't imagine.
I mean, it's definitely not my biggest, but it might be my biggest largemouth on a drop shot.
I mean, that little one on, or that little number one hook. Crazy. All right, last thing before I let you go. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Stop. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Stop. I know you're very excitable out there and you get all charged up, but there's got to be a way, man, because I was so afraid that Carl was going to, not that he was going to beat you. I mean, good for him if he beat you, but I was afraid he was going to beat you by a pound and a half. And man, that was going to be troublesome. I know it hasn't cost you in the past. It's happened to you before. You got to come up with a system, right? Maybe just put 5 call tags in there. If there isn't one floating, you don't start fishing. I don't know what it is.
Oh no, I've tried that. Trust me. I've got a pro size cold keeper on the bottom of my lid that only has 5 cold tags on it. So that when they're gone, you don't do that. And I still screwed it up. So I thought that was a foolproof system. Obviously not. So I actually thought about it this week. I think I've got it figured out now. I think what I have to start doing is actually weighing my fish. So Rapala has
a great scale, Rapala. Yeah, they make a great scale.
Yeah, the tournament digital scale. Like, it's hands down the best tournament scale there is. Like, nearly every Elite Series guy I know uses it. That will force me, so if I weigh every single fish, that forces me, once I get to 5 and I catch my 6th one, I weigh it, I have to select a fish to coal out. And with that touchscreen, it's super easy. It's efficient. You weigh it. You can see all 5, which one's the smallest. You click that. It replaces it. You grab that coal tag. You release that fish.
And you're good to
put
go.
Put the bigger one in there.
Yeah, that'd be good. And also, you'll be more accurate when you tell us that you got a 6-pounder when it's an 8-pounder. You know, so that'll be helpful.
That's
too.
True.
Brandon Polinick has been our guest. Brandon, good luck. By the time people are hearing this, you're already into it at Chick. But good luck the rest of the way in the regular season. And man, it's been exciting. And hopefully, we will chat again.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, man. Thank you. All right, we're going to break in, and we'll come back and wrap it up next. This is Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio on the Bassmaster Radio Network.
Welcome back to Bassmaster Radio, presented by Phoenix Boats. Now, here's your host, Tom Abraham.
Final segment of Phoenix Boats Bassmaster Radio, and as we handle this show back to the dock, let's take a look at some news and notes from around the pond. The 2020 BassPro.com Opens season is about halfway through, but you can visit Bassmaster.com/opens for all the info you need to get registered for this series. It is the highest level a co-angler can fish, and is a tremendous way to hone your skills and learn from the pros and maybe even make a few bucks as you compete against other co-anglers. This year's pro field is better than ever, so grab a co-angler spot now. And due to the incredibly high interest in the Open Series, the championship round of the Opens will be broadcast on Bassmaster Live this season. Now visit Bassmaster.com/sweepstakes for a chance to fish with a Team Toyota Bassmaster Elite Pro. You get to choose from Brandon Lester, Matt Airy, or the G-Man, Gerald Swindle. You'll also win a trip to the 2021 Bassmaster Classic in Fort Worth, Texas, where you will enjoy the full VIP package. You'll also get $2,700 spending cash to go with your accommodations and travel, plus a great fishing prize pack. Total value of this prize is over $21,000. Sign up today and every day at Bassmaster.com and click on Sweepstakes. And don't forget to sign up for Rapala Fantasy Fishing at Bassmaster.com, because each week's winner will win $4,000 in cash and prizes, $4,500 if you are a member of Bass. And this year, over 190 places will win prizes at each event. The grand prize is over $20,000 in cash and prizes. Just go to Bassmaster.com and click on Fantasy for rules and to get in today. And while you're there, join our Bassmaster Radio group, where each week's event's winner will win a rod and reel combo from Enigma. And everyone that finishes ahead of me is entered in a drawing for a prize package from VisitAnderson.com, Rapala, Missile Baits, and Phoenix Boats. Just search Bassmaster Radio under the Groups tab. Now let's take a look at the upcoming schedule. Up next, it'll be the 2020 BassPro.com Bassmaster Central Open at Neely Henry Lake. That is coming up October 22nd through the 24th. The Mossy Oak Fishing Bassmaster High School National Championship, presented by Academy Sports and Outdoors, is at Kentucky Lake and Lake Barkley October 22nd through the 24th as well. In the 2020 Carhartt Bassmaster College National Championship, presented by Bass Pro Shops, is at the Harris Chain October 29th